Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast, where we bring you the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking. This week we're catching up with Johan Borelli, but before that our supporting partners have got some great offers for you. Hydration is super important, often underestimated, and getting it right has a big bearing on how you feel and perform on a day-to-day basis. But it's not simple, as we all sweat at a different rate and lose different amounts of electrolytes as we sweat. Thankfully, Precision Hydration are on a mission to help us get it right by providing top quality electrolyte products in different strengths, along with a free online questionnaire or in-person sweat test to enable them to give you your own tailored hydration plan. Bex Barrett-Honor has been using Precision Hydration all season in EWS, and when I spoke to her recently, she said it had been a game changer for her, helping her feel much better during racing and training, improving recovery and reducing the feelings of fatigue. To get your free hydration plan, you can visit precisionhydration.com and complete their online questionnaire, or you can book yourself in for an in-person sweat test if you want to get more scientific about it. If you decide you want to try using their range of electrolytes, which is worth noting are much stronger than the most of the regular electrolyte products that you'll get, then as a Downtime listener, you get 20% off using the code DOWNTIME, all in capitals, at the checkout over on precisionhydration.com. I've been using the products for a couple of weeks now, and I've been pretty blown away at how they've helped me, to be honest. It's kind of hard to explain, but I feel less fatigued, I guess, for want of a better word, after long rides. And it also seems to combat some of the dull headaches that I'll get on occasion, mostly in the afternoon. I've just felt brighter and more up for training and riding, so it gets my seal of approval for sure. Next up, it's Komoot. It's a new route planning and navigation app that's free to download. And as a Downtime listener, you can also get a free map bundle worth $8.99 by using the code DOWNTIME. And that, again, that's all in capitals. Head to komoot.com now and give it a try for free. That's Komoot, spelled K-O-M-O-O-T. That offer is valid until the end of August 2019, so get on it now before the offer ends. Komoot will help you plan routes for off-road, road, or gravel bike rides. Just give it a start and an endpoint, and Komoot does the hard work for you. You can share your routes with your friends directly through Komoot, and it's compatible with devices like Wahoo and Garmin, making it super easy to get your routes onto those. I know I've struggled to find an easy way to get my rides onto my Garmin in the past, and Komoot has solved that issue for me. Komoot will then give you turn-by-turn navigation so you can focus on enjoying the ride rather than working out where you're going. It's a great app for exploring and having adventures in new areas, and for finding, creating and sharing routes in areas that you know well. So head to komoot.com and get your free map bundle while the offer's still live. In addition to my supporting partners, I also rely on your support. It's you lot that spread the word within your riding groups, and that's how the podcast grows. Please keep on letting people know that they're missing out if they're not listening, and sharing our content on social media is also a great way to spread the word. So massive thanks to everyone who's been helping out. If you want to show your support for the podcast, you can do that by getting yourself something from our webshop, downtimepodcast.com/shop, where we've got t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts and mugs. The website's also got a subscribe page to help you make sure you get all of our episodes and to help you join our fast-growing newsletter. And don't forget, give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. All right, this week I'm joined again by Johan Borelli. Our episode with Johan at the end of last year was super popular, so I thought I'd get him back on for a catch-up. This is a pretty wide-ranging conversation covering his current injury, photography, drug addiction, doping, and plenty more. So without further ado, here's Johan Borelli. Johan Borelli, welcome back to the Downtime Podcast. How's it going?
Hello, I'm good.
Good stuff. But yeah, thanks for coming back.
It could be a little bit better, but no, I'm okay actually. It's good.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit more about the injury, but before we get into that, let's kind of wind it back to the start of the season a little bit. So you entered the season on a new team setup this time around. Tell us a little bit about how that came together.
Yeah, so yeah, basically all new for me as I started to run my kind of my own program with SRAM, and no, it was great. So. Before the first race, we went to a team camp with SRAM and doing some bunch of testing, bunch of runs on the enduro bike, trying different things and stuff and different setup. And that's some stuff that I never done before. And like I really saw that it was super important to do that before the season. So you can actually come to the first race and you have a different setup that can work on the mud or on dry stuff or blah blah blah, and then that's what we did. So I came to the first race in New Zealand and I was like super confident. I was like, okay, if it's raining, I have this setup. If it's dry, I have this setup. And I knew tire pressure. I knew a bunch of things. And then I was, yeah, I was ready. I was ready. It was good.
Wicked. Yeah. Where was your team camp then? Where did you go for that?
We went to, I don't remember the name. where Neiko Mulally.
Windrock.
Windrock. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's such a cool place over there. It's good. It was super cold when we went. It was really cold, and we had snow one day, and it was pissing rain most of the days. But no, it was good. It was a great experience, and it was a mix of enduro riders and the downhill riders from SRAM RockShox. And no, it was super cool to be with everybody before the season starts, and no, it was great.
Yeah. So what kind of stuff were you doing there? Were you using data logging on the bikes? How are you working with the SRAM guys to get set up?
So basically, we established like what we want to try. Coil shock versus air shock, different stuff on the fork, tokens, not, blah, 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 different setting on the bike. And we pick one track. And we put some timing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We used the free lap system.
Yeah, I know that.
And basically you do like 3-4 runs as a warm up, and then as soon as you get to the fast speed, then you start timing, and that's when you start changing things once at a time. You don't want to change plenty of things on the bike. You want to change one thing, then you time. You do like 2-3 runs and you see what is faster. You go back to the original setting. You do some overtime timing and then you change stuff again. And then you, this way, basically you see if you are actually improving things or if you are actually, going in the opposite direction. Yeah. But it's only with timing that you see if the settings that you are doing are actually good or not. Like a bunch of people are doing testing and they don't do time training. And it doesn't make sense because you can have the feeling that it's better, but it doesn't actually mean that it's faster. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And ultimately, sometimes
you can be like on a really comfy bike and it's super smooth and everything, but when you start to charge, then it's not efficient. You're actually going nowhere, but it's super comfortable. So by timing, you actually see if it's good or not, and that's what matters for us. It's the clock.
Yeah, for sure. And what kind of stuff did you learn while you were there then? What were the big things you took away from that team camp?
Well, I tried the for example the coil. So basically you're working on one bike. So for me it was the Commencal Meta 29, and so I tried the coil at first, and then I quickly realized that for me the coil is not as efficient. I prefer to have like a really a live bike in between my legs, and I can only find this feeling with the air shock, and I'm actually way quicker on the air shock than on the coil shock on the Meta. Maybe if I had a different bike it would be a coil shock, but on the Meta what works the best for me is the air shock with the big Negmeg can, the new can that they have, no volume spacers inside, and then that's what we figured out, and on any type of terrain.
Okay,
so
And what about on the fork? Are you running anything tokens-wise in the fork? Do you like it quite progressive?
I kind of like my stuff progressive, but not too progressive. So in my Lyric, it's a 170 Lyric, millimeter Lyric, and I have only 2 tokens. We try 3, but it ramps up too much on the end. And I don't really like it. I prefer to have not linear. I like to have something that that ramps, but not too much. So 2 token for me is perfect. And I ride quite high pressure on the fork, like 90, 92 PSI in the fork. But yeah.
Cool. So then you turn up at Rotorua, first race of the season, feeling pretty good. New bike, new setup, everything going pretty well, yeah?
New bike, new setup, my own mechanic, staying with SRAM over there. And then, I was good. But the funny thing is that I think I put way too much pressure on myself this year. I was like, okay, this year I have everything that I need. I have a perfect setup at the races. And then like I was like, okay, this is the year I am going to perform. And then I really put a lot of pressure on myself. And then I remember in Rotorua, I was just riding with my elbows tight. And I was like, I was just not enjoying myself when I was racing. And then, and at the end of the race, I was like, fuck, well, the race is over. And I'm, I think I ended up like, I don't know, like 26 or something like that.
Yeah.
So I was, yeah, I wasn't really impressed with that. And, with all the training in the winter and everything, and I know that I was in shape, that I could go way faster, but I was just, you know, I wasn't in the moment. I was just thinking about the outcome of the race. I was just thinking about the results, and I wasn't in the moment. So I was just, yeah, doing a bunch of dumb shit, going off track and just like losing my mind. I was like, what the fuck are you doing that to?
where do you think that pressure comes from? You said it comes from yourself, but what kind of came together to create that pressure? Because you seem like a pretty laid back kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, like when you, like, I've been racing for a long time now, and like I'm 33. And like this year in the winter, I think I was way stronger than I ever been before. And so I was like, okay, I'm ready this year. But this year, I have everything that I need, and that I, yeah, and with all the setup that I have around, mechanics and all the SRAM support and everything, and you know, it's kind of a big thing. And I was like, well, I have no choice than performing. And yeah, I think that's where the pressure comes from. But there is nobody in the mountain bike industry, no one of my sponsors is putting any pressure on myself. So it's just from me,
yeah,
which is kind of dumb.
Yeah, but it happens, doesn't it? For sure.
It happens all the time. And you just have to, in this case, it can happen one race and then you can be like, well, okay, this is happening. Now I just have to change my way of riding, of racing, and I just need to remember why I'm racing for in the first place, mm-hmm. and which is just for pure love of the sport and just for pushing myself 100%, and because I learned so many things about that from that, and yeah, so that's what I did in Tasmania when I showed up in Tasmania. And I was in complete different mindset. I just wanted to have fun on my bike, push hard, but no pressure. And then things didn't really go the good way. I had a puncture in the first stage after like 200 meters of racing.
Oh man.
And yeah, I finished the stage on the rim. Two people passed me, so I lost a minute. Finished the stage, put a tube in, and I carried on, and then I had a really thin tube on my rear wheel. So the next two stages, I was like really conservative, like trying to not hit the rocks too hard so I wouldn't lose any more time. And then when I finished the stage, I was like, well, okay, the race is over for me. I think I was like 90 something or 100 or something. And so I was like, well, now I'm going to go stage by stage and try to get some good results, which I did. And so because see, after that, we went to the pit. So I could change my tire. We put a brand new tire, and so I was okay. And that's when I was like, okay, now I'm going to go stage by stage and just try to have fun on my bike and make the show and just enjoy the race, which I did. And then I went progressively. I think I was like 18, then 14, and then like a top 10 on the last stage.
Nice.
Which was great. Like I just proved to myself that I could actually put the shit that happened before on the side and be like, okay, now I'm just going to have fun and just going to go for it. And it worked.
Good stuff.
But yeah, it's kind of frustrating when this kind of stuff happens, you kind of, you're like, wow, fuck.
Yeah.
This was my race. I was really good. And I was just feeling everything was there again. And then you have bad luck. Yeah. But that's part of racing.
Yeah, for sure. There are definitely some things you can't control. When I asked about where the pressure comes from, you mentioned that you were 33. Do you feel there's like a time limit for you to kind of show what you're capable of? Does some of the pressure come from that Like, how do you feel about the age side of things?
No, because if you look at Greg Minnaar, like Greg Minnaar is the perfect example. Look at Steve Pitt. How old is Greg?
He's 38 or 39, I think.
Yeah, so he's 38 and 39, and he was on the podium not so long ago.
Yeah, for sure. And probably would have been on the podium this weekend if he hadn't had that little crash.
Yeah, and he's just killing it. Look at Pili. Pili has been kicking ass until he was 42 or something.
Yeah.
And he still is. So I don't think there is, especially in enduro. Like, look at Nico Vujos as well. Nico Vujos was the perfect example. Like, he stopped racing when he was 40 or something. Yeah. And he was on the podium all the time. So I think, I don't think there is any issues with the age. I think if you are doing a bunch of things around, and you're good. It's just that the younger generation is pushing hard. And if your career is only based on results, then yes, it can be dangerous. Like, if my career was only based on results, like right now with a season like I did and now being injured, then yes, I could be like, maybe there's some young guys that are going to take my spot, and it's totally normal. But my career is not only based on results, which is great.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
It's good. Cool. And then how was Madeira? Because that was the following round, wasn't it? It was a bit of a gap, and then off to the crazy island of Madeira.
Yeah. And Madeira, same kind of stuff. It took me a little bit of time to find my, my flow during the race. And as soon as I found it, my chain snapped.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And he got all tingled in the wheel, and then I had to stop to take it out, and same, I lost a minute, and the race was over. But the next day I took it really funly. Like, I went and I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna have fun, I'm gonna make the show, like, yeah, the race is over anyway. And then I did the first stage on the next day. I was just like, I did a commentary on the first stage all the way long. I was talking to my GoPro all the way long, like cheering on the crowd and everything. And then I kind of released everything. And then same, just by having fun, the results started to be better, like stage by stage. Same thing. I got like a top 10 and a top 15. And then I was like, well, again, like, I know that I can be at the front, you know, I can be in the top 10. So maybe if one day I have a good race that starts right away, like, for example, I have the first stage that I'm in the top 10, then that's going to push me to be back in the top 5. And that's what happened in Whistler last year.
Yeah, so it's about being able to relax into the flow, I guess, and just loosen up and enjoy it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think I'm just going to change my my vision of racing. I think that until now, until my injury, like, in my mind, I'm a racer. I'm a racing the Enduro World Series and some other events. But this is my job, and this is how I make money. And all the stuff that I do around, all the videos and all the media stuff and everything that I do around was an extra. And I think that now I'm actually going to take this extra, all what I do around the racing part, that's going to be the main thing. And the racing is the extra. So I'm going to just show up to the races and I'm going to enjoy myself. And I'm pretty sure it's going to work way better for me this way.
Yeah, takes the pressure off the racing element, I guess.
Takes the pressure off. And of course, I know that I can win. I can be on the podium. I don't think I would be one of these guys, you know, that are going to win every races for a season, like Marta Maes or Samir. But I'm pretty sure that I can be like consistently in the top 10, and I can just throw one podium or two during a season and maybe go take a win. But I know that I can do it. It's in me. These guys, They have nothing more than me. They are just humans, and I'm a human.
Yeah, totally.
So if they can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, for sure. Good stuff. So like you say, an unlucky start to the season, and that, I guess, that carried on, and a pretty unfortunate injury. Talk us through how that happened to you.
Yeah, so basically, Madeira, I started just before Madeira, I started this YouTube channel, and I started this series called Into the Nyar. I don't know if you saw some episode of that.
Yeah, I have seen a few, yeah.
And I got I really liked it. So I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. So I got really into it, and I pushed myself when I was out there on my own, and I was like trying different things and different lines. And I was like, okay, can I actually go down that and try this? And then it was actually super good for me because I was like, yeah, I was improving my riding by a ton. And so basically I was kind of getting at after Madeira, a month and a half after Madeira, like everything was going well, like media was going well. And yeah, it was just great. And I was feeling this energy, and it was just so good. And I was feeling that I was just untouchable. You know what I mean? Like when you get to that point and you're like, well, I can do anything. Nothing's going to happen. And and then I just went for a bike ride with my buddies. And I remember we were kind of pedaling along. And then one of my buddies said, oh, there is this skinny over there. And I heard that there is this guy, and he climbs it with his e-bike. And I was like, well, I'm pretty sure I can try to climb it with my normal bike. So we went to check it out. And then he was like, well, but I think he starts from the top up there. And I was like, well, I'm going to start from the bottom. and then I just went on my bike and tried to climb this thing. And I was kind of doing some trial moves. And then I just lost the balance and fell on the side from like maybe 2 meters high. It was full of branches and bushes, so I couldn't really see where the ground was. And I fell with my leg completely extended. And then and when my foot hit the ground, I heard like these two pop, pop, pop. And then I was like, ugh. And like right away, big pain. I was on my knees, like in like really safety, like protection mode. And my two friends came and they were like, you okay? And I was like, well, I think it's a bad one, guys. So I stayed there for 10 minutes. And then they made me sit on the side. I tried to stand up, and then I couldn't stand up. I couldn't put pressure on my leg. And I was like, well, fuck, So I called my physio right away, went back to Whistler. That was in Squamish. I went back to Whistler, and then my physio took me and then did some testing on my leg. And then he was like, well, I think your ICL is gone. And then booked me for MRI. And then that's when we discovered that meniscus was completely torn. ACL was torn. MCL was a second degree tear. I had some fractures on the tibia plateau, one fracture on the head of the femur. And I was like, well, fuck, just in one. One little crash like that.
Yeah, that's super unlucky.
So yeah, really, really unlucky. Wow. Yeah, it's just, but you know, things happen for a reason, and it's good. Like I was pretty depressed when it happens, for sure. And then 2 weeks after that, I was starting my rehab a little bit to get ready for the surgery. And then I was able to walk. I was able to go to the gym and do a bunch of stuff. I couldn't put like a lot of pressure on my leg, but I was starting to feel like I could do a bunch of things. And I was like, wow, maybe I don't need a surgery. Maybe with a good brace, I can ride. So one day I just put a brace on and then went for a bike ride. And then the first corner that I took, I felt my femur sliding on top of my tibia. And yeah, I was like, wow. So I stopped right away, and then like extreme pain. I cried for a little bit. And I was like, well, yeah, I guess there is no way around it. I just need surgery. I just need this knee to be fixed, and I won't jump on my bike for a long time. So yeah, I kind of accepted that, but now it's good. Now I just had surgery, and I'm in a good mindset.
Good stuff. Yeah, and we talked a bit in the last episode about your approach to life and kind of looking for the positives and stuff, but I mean, it must be pretty challenging when, like you say, you felt like you're in a great place, and you know, it's a season-ending injury. Where was the light in the forest kind of thing? Where did you look to get some positive energy from in those sort of situations?
Well, at first it's kind of hard. At first you kind of, you know, when you are in this really kind of positive things where everything is going good and stuff, you kind of suddenly everything stops, and you're like, well, okay, how am I gonna keep entertaining people? How am I gonna do that? So I was trying to find ways to do it, and so that's what kept me going a little bit, to try to find the motivation and be like, okay, I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna train hard still, and yeah, that was a little bit my escape thing. But then I had surgery, and then now I'm on crutches for 6 weeks, and there is no way I can do anything like that. So yeah, but it's all good. Now I'm, you know, I know that my knee is fixed, and yeah. I'm going to be jumping on my bike in probably the next 4 to 6 months.
Okay.
And when I'm going to be on it, I'm going to enjoy it so much that it's going to be the best thing ever. You know, like,
awesome. Yeah. So have you kind of redirected your focus, I guess, for a period of time while you're not able to ride onto other projects?
Yeah. So there is the photography side of me. I'm taking photos as well. And so I was like, well, okay, so now I have time, and maybe it's time to explore a little bit deeper this passion that's growing in me. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm an athlete, and as an athlete, as a racer, you like challenges. That's the only way we get, you know, the fulfillment. And I was like, how can I get this fulfillment, this challenge, into photography? So I just applied for a media pass to go shoot at Rampage.
Awesome. Straight in.
I was like, okay, you know what? It's going to be perfect. I will just be able to walk at this time. No crutches. Probably the gnarliest event for a photographer to go shoot.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. So I just applied 3 days ago. And I'm going to shoot for the Lone Wolf.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I have a bunch of ideas to shoot and create articles to write about my experience over there. And no, it's going to be good. It's going to be, super good to be, and still for me to be in the scene, to know, to be over there with the riders that I know. And yeah, it's going to be a great experience.
Yeah. And good. That'd be good rehab climbing up and down the rocks out there. Yeah.
I'm going to have to be pretty careful because I still don't know how if I'm going to be able to actually climb everywhere and stuff like that. So I will see how it goes. But they know it. The Lone Wolf guys, they know my situation. And so we have plan A, plan B. So we are all set. We're good.
Fantastic. Yeah. Is it pretty easy to get an invite to something like that as a photographer? How do you go about doing that?
Well, you need you just need to apply, and but you need a magazine.
Okay.
You can't be, for example, just shooting for a brand. You need to have a magazine. You need to have an outlet to shoot for.
Yeah.
So, which is pretty difficult because the outlets in the mountain bike world, there's not many. So there's only a few spots that are available. I would say like maybe 20 to 30 spots as a photographer. And there's probably, I don't know, maybe 150, 200 that are applying for that. So yeah, we'll see if I get it.
Cool. Yeah, fingers crossed. And will you be investing in any new camera kit or gear to go with it for that project?
No, I already have like everything that I need. Yeah, I might buy a new another body because if you have two bodies, you can actually get more and more shots. Because right now I shoot with Sony and I only have one body, and all the time I have to change lens if I have a fisheye lens, and I have to switch to a long lens. So if I have two bodies, I can have a fisheye lens on one and then do some close up stuff, and then have a long lens so I can do some long shots. So we'll see, but it's all good.
Excellent. And how is the rehab from the injury going? Are you able to do much at the moment, or are you kind of having to wait for like the swelling from the operation and stuff to go?
So I just had a surgery 8 days ago. And so right now I'm on a brace. I can only move with crutches. I'm going to be on crutches for 6 weeks because of the repair of the meniscus. And which is actually great. The surgeon actually stitched up 80% of the meniscus, and the rest she had to cut it off and get rid of it. But she saved basically all my meniscus, which means that I won't need another surgery when I will be, 50 or 60 to replace completely my meniscus. So I'm pretty pumped on that. And now I just have to be careful and let everything heal. And so far, there is no much rehab. I can only bend my knee at 90 degrees, which I already got to 90 degrees. I can get to a fully extension. But that's it. I can, after the 6 weeks, when I'm able to walk, then we're going to have to start big rehab and go deeper and get the full range of motion and everything. And that takes a long time. Get the all the strength back into the leg, because in 6 weeks I'm going to lose all the muscles.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be a big. It's a big process. Like knee surgery is it's a big one.
Yeah.
And man,
sure.
Right after the surgery, like the 2 days after the surgery, like I've never been in that much pain before in my life. Like it was just insane. I was just counting down the minutes. Like I couldn't, even with all the painkillers that they gave me, all the drugs, it was just it was just so much pain. And then suddenly it got better and better and better. And by day four, I quit all the painkillers and everything. But dude, the first 2 days, I was like, wow, this thing is insane. How am I gonna survive for that?
Nasty stuff. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better. Where does the kind of the support come from to kind of plan your way back to full strength and racing again? Does that something that the team helps with, or is it because it's your own project? Do you have to go and find the people that you want to work with?
Well, I'm pretty lucky to live in Whistler, and knee surgery in Whistler with all the skiers is actually a pretty common thing.
Yeah, fair play.
Oh yeah, I go in the street and then there is people that kind of comes to me and they're like, "Oh, what did you do?" And then they show me their knees, and they had like kind of scars everywhere, and they're like, "Yeah, I had 4 knee surgeries and blah blah," and then I can still ski. And so they're like, "Yeah, I feel your pain," but yeah, it's all good. So yeah, we have probably the best physios in the world here. And gym equipment and stuff. So yeah, so it's all good.
Cool. So
I have my physio, Mike Conway at Back in Action, and he's gonna help me for that. Like he's basically been the guy always when I have a little boo boo. He's kind of looking after me. But now it's perfect.
Sweet. And should be ready for the start of next season, I guess, or 6 months down the line.
So basically. Well, basically, they say 6 to 9 months to be 9 months to start riding at 100% without thinking about, oh shit, I'm going to put my foot on the ground and maybe it's not going to be strong enough. After 9 months, normally you start to be like, you get all your reflex back and, you know, you can ride again. And so I had the surgery on the 28th or 29th of July. And the first EWS next year is the 25th of March in Colombia.
Okay.
So that will be 9 months. Perfect.
Excellent. It's like it was designed to be that way.
So yeah, it was designed. Yeah, it's meant to be. So I'm going to be in Colombia. What a good best place to start the season. Like this. This country. We had the EWS over there 2 years ago, or last year. And dude, it was just so amazing. Like all the people, and like we had such a big crowd. It was insane. Like it was for us racer. It was like really unforgettable moment. It was just so good.
Yeah, it looked insane. The crowd, especially for that, was the one with the like the stage in the streets. Yeah.
the stage in the streets, and it was just crazy. Like we felt like we were rock stars. Like seriously,
nice.
Like we were going down the streets, and then people were just screaming, "Barely, barely!" It was just insane.
That's amazing.
So yeah, cool. I'm pumped to go back over there and start the season in Colombia. It's gonna be good. And then we have Chile, and Chile is the same vibe. Chile is the people in Chile are amazing. Yeah, it's gonna be good.
Yeah, and do you think the fact that you're coming back from injury, does that kind of also take the pressure off you a little bit, or the personal pressure that you put on yourself?
Oh, totally. I think it will be it will be a test for me. And it's gonna be great, and for sure I won't put pressure on myself for that, because for that reason, because I'm just coming back from injury, and it's gonna be first race after that, and I'm gonna be enjoying every moment even more now. I'm actually doing it already, but that's gonna be next level.
Excellent.
Next level. Be happy. Be free. Be barely.
Cool. And you mentioned that you started your YouTube channel. Tell us a little bit about kind of what you're set out to achieve with that, and how you're getting on with it. Because it's a lot of work, right?
It is a lot of work. It's so, especially what I do. My idea was, okay, I'm going to go, like, I don't want to do a channel just to do a channel and, you know, to become a YouTuber and do some kind of weird stuff. And... like I want to bring something that's a little bit different. And I was like, okay, what do I like? And what I love on my bike is to ride gnarly stuff. I'm super good at it. And I'm not scared about riding really steep shit and like being super precise and, you know, like on the needle and da, 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 da. Like I really like this kind of stuff. And which we never do in Enduro World Series. Like we never ride this kind of stuff. So I was like, okay, so how can I show the world the way I ride this stuff? So I was like, well, I'm going to just take a GoPro and I'm going to show the lines that I'm going to do and I'm going to ride them. And that's what I did. The first episode, I actually took a trail in Squamish, Treasure Trail. And it was just a coincidence that I started the channel this day. I was supposed to go shoot with a 4.5.10.
Mm-hmm.
And it was raining, so we canceled the shooting. So I was down there with a GoPro, and I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to start it. And then went over there and did the thing. I really enjoyed it and posted the video. And the response from people was amazing. Like people were like, wow, this thing is actually great. And the comments and everything and how to improve it. So I bought a second camera to film on my own, to have a camera on the ground, camera on my head to film the line, and a camera that films me. And I kind of improved my thing, and then I was learning how to edit videos. And it was just, it's rich. And when you learn something, it gives you happiness. So it was just like a really rich, really rich experience. I was really enjoying it, and people were enjoying it. The feedbacks were good. And it was just great. So, like, I'm not doing that to grow my, to grow YouTube channel and other platform or anything. I'm just doing it because I like it. I want to show what I can ride, and I can ride really gnarly stuff. And the feedback from people were actually great. So it's like they're having a good time. I'm having a good time, and I'm giving a little bit of joy, and everybody's happy. It's good.
Yeah, and I watched. A track walk video that you did, I think it was Madeira, where you were like,
it was Madeira, yeah.
It was super useful, actually, just seeing the way you guys, you know, what you're looking for when you're on a track walk, how you're assessing the lines and stuff. And it was really cool to watch, actually. So yeah, definitely learned something from that. So I'll be tuning in for some more of those.
Cool.
But yeah, I guess kind of hard to keep the momentum going in that, but you've been covering some of your injury stuff on there as well.
Yeah, I did a little bit. Because I was like, well, I don't want to, just let the people down just like that. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to bounce back and then try to, kind of update my injury and how I feel about it and stuff. And so I'm going to do one again and explain what happened and my mindset and everything. Or maybe I should just put the link of that because I'm talking a lot about it. And... But yeah, And I have some ideas, but now I'm a little bit I'm stuck. I can't really do much with my crutches.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah, but it'd be good, maybe good to see some behind the scenes stuff from Rampage would be cool.
Oh, I will. I'm probably I'm for sure. I'm gonna go down there and I'm gonna film stuff. I'm gonna have a few GoPros and film what I'm doing. And I'm also gonna start filming my rehab when I'm actually more active, because right now it's pretty boring. I can't really do much. But I'm gonna film some of my rehab and give some inputs on like mindset that you have to have and stuff like that, so I can maybe help some people that are in the same situation.
And
there is already a bunch of people that are testing me on Instagram and everything, and they just had surgery, or they are going to have surgery, so they are kind of asking questions, and it's good. We are all talking a little bit. It's kind of cool. It's positive. It's a positive experience for sure.
Yeah, good stuff. And so last time we chatted, we were talking about your background, and you mentioned that you spent some time in Australia and got pretty heavily into the party scene over there.
Yeah.
And we carried on chatting a little bit after we'd finished recording, and you mentioned that it had gone a little bit, a bit further than that
out of
for
end.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you all right to talk about that a bit more?
Yeah. I'm totally fine with it. Like, it's part of my life, and I don't regret it. And it's actually what brought me where I am today. So basically what happened in Australia, I met this girl when I was in Perth, and she was really into the party scene, and but like big time. And then one day we went at a party, and then at this guy's place, and like basically there was drug everywhere, like cocaine and ecstasy and stuff. And then during the party, she asked me if I wanted to try ecstasy, and I was like, well, you know what, yes. So same, I was young, I wasn't scared about anything, I was just trying to see the limits in my life, and I was like, well, you know what, yes, let's take it. So I took an ecstasy and I really liked it. So we got into that, and then into cocaine as well, bunch of things. And then this guy that we were at the party was her best friend, and he was a drug dealer, big drug dealer in Perth. And but super super cool guy, like you wouldn't see on his face that he's actually he doesn't look like a bad guy. He was actually super super cool and friendly and everything.
Yeah.
That was just what he was doing. He was just dealing drug and selling it and blah, blah, blah. And then so all the time we were coming at this guy's place, everything was free.
Wow.
So
that's tempting, isn't it? Yeah.
It was pretty tempting. And then, I've been into the party scene since like 2-3 years already when I was in France, partying hard. And then, for me, it was just like the continuity of the thing. So I went into that pretty deeply. And then, partying like maybe 3-4 nights a week. And then one day we went to his place, and he was like, yeah, guys, I have to show you something. So we were like kind of really restricted people, like really his close friend. And then he was like, okay, I'm going to start dealing this new drug. And this drug was crystal meth. So we tried, and then we all got addicted, like big time.
Wow.
Completely addicted. Yeah. Like smoking smoking this shit every like almost every day, and couldn't sleep, so we were taking another drug. I don't really remember the name to be able to sleep after that. And then things started to really go down, really deeply, quickly. Like my health was starting to be pretty bad. I was getting sick all the time. My teeth were getting pretty bad as well. I started to have cavities everywhere, and like super super bad. And then that's when I started to realize that something was going wrong in my life. I was like, fucking hell, I've been racing my bike since I'm a little kid. I've been training and everything, and now I'm like 22, and I'm there's something that's missing, but I couldn't quit. Like I couldn't stop that. So we kept on parlying, and I was going to the gym and taking some stuff to get massive. I was like 86, 87 kilos when I was in Australia, like almost a bodybuilder, bodybuilder style. <Wow. laughs> To be good looking at the at the beach. And yeah, it was pretty weird. And one day, so we did that for 6 months, which was pretty pretty long.
Yeah.
And one day we went at a party at his place, at this guy's place, and I went to the party and I was really really strong in my mind that I wouldn't take any drug this night. I was like, you know what, Johan, you're gonna try and you're gonna not gonna take any drug, you're just gonna drink and you see how it goes. And then some dickhead probably put something in my drink, and I had the worst bad trip in my life. And I basically felt like everybody at the party wanted to kill me. And I remember it like if it was real, like it was such a like vivid situation. And I had to leave the party. I took a cab, went back to our place. I didn't have the keys. I was sweating like crazy. Called my girlfriend. She came back home. She opened me the door, and then she saw that I was like freaking out. And then by the time she opened the door, she closed it, and then I was thinking that all the guys from the party were waiting outside and they were waiting to come inside just to kill me. And then she tried to give me some sleeping pills so I could actually calm down. And I was like, holy shit, she's actually into the thing. She's with them. She's gonna kill me as well. So I pretended that I took the sleeping pill, and then I pretended to fall asleep. Then she left, and then I split the sleeping pill on the ground. And then so she left, she went back to the party, and I was on my own at the place. And then for I don't know how long, but I was in my underwear and I was running in circle around the house, like going from the front door back to the garage into the front door. And I was like just running around in circle, chasing these guys that weren't there, to the point that we had a two storage house. So, and our bedroom was on the top floor. And then at some point, I kind of dismounted the bed. We had a big wooden bed. And then I dismounted the bed and I had this big bar, wooden bar with me. And I was ready to kick their ass if they were coming. And I was ready to jump from the window to kill myself. And then at some point early morning, she came back home. And then when I saw her coming, like we crossed into the stairs. And she looked at me and she said, wow. She basically saw death into my eyes. Like I was ready to kill myself. And so it kind of lasted like 24 hours, this thing. And then it mellowed down a little bit. And but I was still freaking out. I still didn't know if the story was real. I still didn't know like if it was wrong, if I completely imagined everything. And it was completely fucked up. And then I remember, so that was the Sunday. So it took me like 2 days to kind of recover from it. And then on the Wednesday, I went back to work. And then when I was at work, I kind of freaked out again. And I was like, well, fuck, where is my passport? I haven't seen my passport since a long time now. Where is my passport? And I was like, fucking hell, they took my passport. It's actually real. I'm going to go back home and they're going to kill me or something. So I left work, went back to my place, and I finally found my passport. And I was like, fucking hell, Johan, what are you doing? Like, you're just becoming crazy. And then that night, my girlfriend went back to a party and I stayed home. And I took my phone and I called my mom and I explained her everything. I said, look, mom, this is what I'm doing in Australia. And I told her everything. And she freaked out, of course. And she was like, you know what, Johan? It's been 2 weeks now that I'm having nightmares every night. And I'm seeing you coming back from Australia in a box, dead. So she was like, either you're killing yourself with the drug or either you are in danger. Yeah. So she was like, you need to come back home. You can't stay here anymore. You need to come back home and we need to take care of you. And that's what I did. I bought a flight ticket. And 4 days later, I left. And I went back to France. After a year and a half spending in Australia, I wanted to spend my life over there. I wanted to spend my life in Australia with this girl because I loved her so much. And 4 days later, I was gone.
Wow. And did you take anything after that? Like how challenging was it?
So I went back to France, and then it was just so hard to... like the only thing that I wanted to do when I was in France was to go back to Australia. Yeah. I was like, well, I just need to go back there. There's nothing I can do here. I was staying at my cousin's place in Nice, and I just wanted to go back over there. So I was waking up every night. I was sweating. I was shaking. I was just like, I did my how do you say when a drug addict get rid of the drugs? How do you?
There's a term for like it, no? I can't think of the word. We'd call it cold turkey, I guess, when you're going without something that you feel you need.
Yes. So maybe, yeah. So that's what I did, and for 3 weeks I just it was the worst situation in my life, and then after 3 weeks something happened, and I was like, you know what, Johan, you are in France now, you're back here, and your life is here. You're gonna find some new sponsors tomorrow, you're gonna find a job. So I put together a resume, and I called a few friends. So I called JP Bruni, so Loic Bruni's dad, and he has a club in the south of France, and he was running a team with Vario bikes at the time. And I called him, I was like, you, JP, I'm back, I want to race again, can you help me? And he was like, well, yes, I can get you 2 bikes for the season, and you can come with us race the French Cup in downhill, do a few enduros like Maxi Avalanche, Mega Avalanche. And so that was such a big relief. I was like, okay, I'm back into the scene. I'm going to be with my friends. I'm going to race again. And that's going to be my escape thing. And then the same day, I went to a few different bike shops in Nice. And then one of them was like, well, we know, yeah, we need someone. And we take you. So I found a job and sponsors again. And that was it. That was my escape route.
Big.
That's what basically saved my life. Like biking basically saved.
Amazing turnaround. Yeah. Did the cravings? Yeah. Did they take a long time to kind of go away? Like 3 weeks is, I guess, just the start of it. Yeah.
3 weeks, and then I don't really remember exactly how long it took, but let's say that after 3 weeks, the waking up phase and shaking and stuff were gone. And I didn't want to take it anymore. So my mom is a yoga teacher, and then and that helped me as well. So I was going to a yoga studio in Nice, and I was doing a bunch of yoga and kind of, you know, to kind of let it go and be like, okay, now I'm here. This is me in my body, and you know, to go back into Earth, like to go back here. Because I was just flying, so, flying, woohoo!
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. It's cool that riding and yoga, you know, had your back at that time. Then, really,
yeah. It was pretty intense. But you know what? I don't regret anything from that. It was an experience. Like, it wasn't a good or bad experience. It was an experience, and then I needed to go through that. And but then I think if you are in this situation, to get out of it, you need some goals after. You need to set some goals to yourself, and you need to, and racing is actually perfect for that. And you have to be like, okay, now, because I went in a completely extreme direction, now I need to go in the opposite direction, and it has to be extreme as well. Because that's what I'm looking for in my life. I need to be extreme. And I was like, okay, now I need to go back and race some World Cups and get some UCI points and go through all the process again and get back to my speed. And that's the only way. And then you train, and then you focus on that, and you only think about that. Because if you don't have any goals, then you kind of... you know, you're kind of navigating your way without any purpose, really. And there is any circumstance that can trigger it. And then you can go back to it, and you can go deep into the shit again.
Yeah.
So it's only by setting goals that I think that you can. Well, it's actually the only way in life. We need goals. If you don't have any goals in life, then fuck, you're doing it wrong.
and do you think that, you know, the experience that you had with that, has that kind of, has that helped you get through what you're going through now? Does it give you some perspective into, you know, dealing with injuries and other kind of dark patches?
Probably. Yeah, probably. I haven't really linked these two things together yet, but yeah, probably. You know, like when you basically life is all about experiences, and from each experience you learn stuff. So yeah, probably now dealing with this injury, then yeah, I'm probably I've learned some stuff from this experience in Australia, and then yeah, it's helping me to go through that now.
Good. Yeah,
for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for being so open about that. It's a pretty intense time.
Well, you're welcome. I think it's if there is some people that are going through that now and that can help them, then I'm actually okay to talk to them about it and to help them. So if you guys are going through that now, just reach out on Instagram or emails or anything. And we can talk about
awesome.
It.
Awesome.
Because it's tough. It's tough and it's dangerous. It's not healthy, and you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that in your life.
For sure.
Brett TP is the perfect example. Brett TP went through the same shit, and look at him now.
Yeah, bike saved him.
Look at him. He's just he's insane. Like TP is insane. Like you see him in the bike park, and he has like all this crowd around him, and he smiles, like he just smiles at everything, and it's cool to see this way.
Good stuff.
He's a big inspiration cool. for me.
All right, well let's go from one type of drug use to another and get your updated thoughts on doping within EWS, because obviously there's been progress. So
there's been a few stories.
Richie's back, and the story that we have been given is that he picked something up through someone else's bottle. And then also we've obviously had the issue with Martin Mays picking up an injury, a pretty bad injury, I think, in the New Zealand Enduro and having some treatment which involved a banned substance, which has unfortunately given him a pretty big ban as well mid-season from probably the season of his career so far.
A banned substance that wouldn't improve his
yeah, it's just a blocking agent, I think.
On Martin Mays. Yeah. So we can go back from all the beginning if you want. But in the case of Richie and Jared's story, I think when Richie released that he was going back to racing, and he was going back to racing in La Tuile, like the text that came out on Instagram and on Pinkbike, this text wasn't from him. That's from his lawyer, probably. Like he didn't write that. That's from his lawyer. And I think this text was really badly put together. It was really, like basically, he was in this text. He was saying that it wasn't his fault. Like he just took a bottle from someone else, and that's it. And which is kind of weird. And we heard this story multiple times in the Tour de France and this kind of shit. And of course, people lost their mind. They were like, "What the fuck? This is another shitty excuse." And of course, it didn't happen this way. So I just think it wasn't really well put together. And then I went into the Pinkbike comments after this article, and then I found Jared Graves comment, because he actually explained everything that they did, all the research that they did when they got suspended, and that was from his end. Like he wrote everything from his end. And he explained all the steps, step by step, what they did to research stuff. And they went on the WADA website, and they Googled the substances. And on the WADA website, these substances didn't show up. And if you Google them, they actually show up. So it was kind of a weird,
okay,
of a weird thing. And in my opinion, they didn't take that to cheat. It was just like, and Jared says it, of they are guilty because they didn't do right. enough research.
Yeah,
they are guilty for that. Are they guilty for cheating? No, and I believe okay. it. I believe that. And so in their case, yeah, it's kind of, well, yes, they made the mistakes. They should have done more research. But at the same time, in EWS, that was the first doping control we ever had in 5 years. We never had any people coming to us talking about doping. We never had any teaching about it. So I've grew up from that with that because of my brother was racing cross country, and he has been world champ in cross country as well, and he was completely against doping, and so I grew up with like, okay, when you go to the pharmacy, if you have a cold, then you have to check the ingredients of what you are taking, and you have to check what you are putting in your body because it can be a banned substance, and you don't want to be controlled with that. You don't want your career to end up like that. So I grew up with that, with this knowledge of like, okay, when I take something, I have to make sure there's nothing in there that's going to put me in this bad situation. But in enduro, people are coming from a different horizon. People are just showing up here, and then suddenly they are good, and they have no knowledge about that. And if they have a sore wrist or something, they're going to go to the pharmacy and they're going to take some stuff, but they are not going to ask the pharmacist, hey, is anything in this thing is actually into the WADA list? No, they just take it. But I think that now, with all that happened, people are actually pretty aware that they can't fuck it up anymore. And it's actually their responsibility to make sure that they are not putting in their body anything that's on the WADA list. So I think it's kind of shitty that it happened to them. To Richie, Jared, and Martin now, but now everybody knows. Like we can't let that happen anymore. We can't fuck around. Like no, now if you're injured, then check what you're taking. If your injury is still painful, it doesn't allow you to ride, then you don't ride. But you're not going to take something that's actually going to mask the pain if you are completely injured. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Like sometimes you have to stay sub. You have to stay okay. Well, you have to say, I'm in pain. There's nothing that's legal that can mask this pain. If I want to mask this pain, I actually have to take some really bad stuff, and some stuff are in the WADA list. Then you're not racing. Yeah. You don't want to take the risk.
Yeah, it seems to have grown some awareness around it for sure. I think they had a big a talk around it with all the riders at the last round of the EWS. Which sounded like it was good.
Yeah, they had the talk in Latvia. Yeah. So of course there is people that believe in their story, and there is people that don't believe in that. And apparently it was kind of pretty intense during this meeting with all the riders. Some people were accusing Richie and saying that he was a cheater and everything. But Richie did the best thing ever. He won.
Yeah.
He just won. So of course he has been tested again, and his test is going to come back negative.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, fair play.
So he's proving everybody that that he doesn't need that, and that's great.
And it's been a shame to see Martin out with such a strong start to the season, but it does mean that I think he shifted his focus to the downhill world champs in Mont Saint-Anne, which is going to make it was already going to be an exciting race, but to have Martin after his silver medal last year at downhill worlds kind of focusing specifically on that event is going to make it interesting. Do you watch much of the downhill stuff?
Oh, I do, yeah, all the time. I'm watching the live, and I just love it. Like I think every mountain biker on this planet loves watching the watching the World Cup in downhill, especially like women and men. Like everything is so exciting now. It's so good, so cool to watch.
Yeah, it's been an amazing season so far, isn't it? Super exciting.
Wow. Yeah, it's like the speed that they are going now is like it's insane. Have you watched the helmet cam of Amaury Pierron in Léger?
Yeah, it looks sped up, but it's not.
Okay. You're like, is this actually real? Like,
yeah, it's another level.
It's insane.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, of course, I'm a big fan. I'm really into it. It's so cool.
Awesome. So, who do you think's got the Monson and World Champs win coming their way this year? Then for men's and women's, if you had to make a prediction,
it's really pretty complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. It's really tricky.
Yeah,
one.
There's Loris, Amaury, Loic. These three Frenchies are always there. They're always on the podium. They're always close together. But you can't, Laurie Greenland, Brooke, fucking hell, Gwyn, that's actually training for that right now.
It's
Martin that's coming for this event, and there is many more, like there is maybe 20 that are able to win.
It's crazy. So,
and it's one race, you know, it's one race event. And we know that Loic Bruny is good at that, like he's good at winning this event. So we'll see. Like it's going to be interesting. Yeah. We're kind of trying to figure out if we're going to go over there to watch it, to watch it live over there, or if we're just going to stay here and we stuff. I will still be on crutches and I won't be able to do much. So maybe it's going to be too much to go over there. But I'd love to go in Mont Saint-Anne and watch the event.
How far is it from you? Is it a flight away?
Yeah, it's one flight. Yeah. Four hour okay. Flight.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not too bad,
yeah.
but traveling with my crutches and the baby and stuff, and going over there and renting a car and moving over there, like maybe a bit too much. So we'll see.
Yeah, fair play. And how is parenting going?
It's
Anna,
good.
Anna, yeah.
Yeah, Anna. She's super good. No, everything is going well. Like at first, like every parent, sleeping can be an issue. Like they just don't want to sleep.
Life's too exciting.
They don't know how to sleep. Like, I don't know. There's something with that. Like, why don't you go to bed and you close your eyes and you sleep into all the way till the morning? No, they don't do that. But now everything is going well. The sleeping is not an issue anymore. She just wakes up early, like 5:30 every morning, 5 or 6 if we are lucky. But no, that's good. And she's super funny. Like she's like a really joyful little girl, full of energy. She's just she's just a funny baby. Awesome. And we are lucky. We have some friends that live right beside us, and they have a three-year-old son. And these two are just in love. They just play together. Like we can leave them in the outside in the forest and they're gonna play for hours together, like super gently and stuff, and it's so cool. So
amazing.
Yeah, everything is going well, and it's pretty rad to see this little person growing.
It's definitely good. Yeah, I guess that helps as well with it, you know, because you've still got plenty to do even if you're not away riding and racing. You've got
for sure
plenty going on there.
For sure. And Crankworx coming.
Yeah.
So I have a bunch of things to do during Crankworx. So it's gonna be good.
Nice. And your birthday coming up as well.
And my birthday. So for my birthday, I was like, okay, well, there is always parties during Crankworx. So I wanted to do something cool. I wanted to have a party. So Commensal and myself, we put together this party, and actually a bunch of my sponsors are joining us, and I wanted to give back, because all the trails that we have here are amazing, and I just wanted to give back to them by doing a donation. So I was like, okay, well, if we can give away some stuff. And we put together a raffle, some raffle tickets. then people can donate to win some stuff. And we're going to give back 100% of his money to all the trails association in the Sea to Sky corridor. Sweet. So we have a bike. We have a Commensal Meta 29er that we're going to give away. We have some wheels from Spank. We have some shoes from 510. We have a bunch of stuff. Dakin gave some stuff. 100% is going to give some stuff. Like a bunch of people are actually giving some stuff away. So yeah, hopefully we're going to get a bunch of money to give back to this trail association so they can make even better trails. Some gnarlier stuff for me.
Excellent.
And no, it's good. Yeah, it's my little thing to do. I like to give back to people. Yeah. So right now that's the only thing I can do. So yeah, that's my way.
Sounds good, man. Sounds really good. Cool. Well, we should wrap up and let you get away because I know you've got a physio appointment pretty soon. But we asked you our three questions last time. We've added one to that mix now that we're over 100 episodes. So we'll just do that real quickly if that's all right.
Yeah.
So the new question is, what's one thing that you do every day that you think benefits you?
One thing that I do every day that benefits me. Every day I try to go in the forest because I really like to be in the forest. Like it can sound a little bit I don't know, kind of hippie, but I really like to be in the forest on my own and to resource a little bit and to kind of look around and to actually feel that we don't need much to be happy. And I feel like the forest in Whistler is actually super good for that because you go in there and you're like, wow, this thing is beautiful. And you see all the wildlife, you see bears, you see birds, you see everything. And it makes you feel good. You don't need all this material stuff that we are craving all the time. So that's something that I maybe don't do every day, but I try to do it every day. And it's really fulfilling for me.
Nice. I like it. Oh, yeah. Good stuff. Well, we'll let you get away. But just before we do, can you remind people where they can follow you?
So you guys can follow me on Instagram at Johan Barelli, or you can follow me also on Instagram, but my photography account, and it's Barelli Graphy. So my last name and Graphy, like photography, but or pornography, but just Barelli Graphy.
Not that kind of photo.
And you can also follow me on YouTube on my channel. So there is nothing really happening right now. But don't worry, as soon as I'm back on my bike, it will be pretty rich, and we're gonna have fun.
Awesome.
And that's it. And Facebook and blah blah blah. But the main thing is Instagram and YouTube now.
Cool. We'll put links in the show notes to the Instagram stuff and the YouTube channel.
Perfect.
So find that there. All right, well, it's super nice catching up. Have an awesome Crankworx, a fantastic birthday, and
thank you, Chris.
All the best for some rehab, and I look forward to seeing the Rampage shoot.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be good. I'm excited.
Cool. Cheers, yeah, and have a good one.
Thank you so much, Chris. Bye-bye.
All right, that's it for our catch-up with Johan Barelli. I hope you enjoyed listening and got something out of the episode. Thanks to Camus and Precision Hydration for supporting the podcast. And don't forget, they've both got great listener offers for you. Head to precisionhydration.com to learn more about your specific hydration needs and for your free hydration plan. To get 20% off all Precision Hydration products, just use the code DOWNTIME, all in capitals, at the checkout. Also, head to Komoot.com/G, that's Komoot spelled K-O-M-O-O-T, and use the code DOWNTIME, again all in capitals, and that'll get you a free regional map bundle of your choice worth $8.99. That offer's valid until the end of August, so you need to be quick on that one. Both these links, along with other things that we've mentioned in the show, are over in the show notes on our website, downtimepodcast.com. If you've got a couple of minutes, then leave us a review wherever and whatever platform you listen on. Give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to help support the podcast and get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon. But until then, get out and ride.